Homeward is committed to partnering with parents and equipping you with the resources you need to raise your kids to become responsible adults. And Steadfast Companies, a leading real estate investment company, is proud to partner with Homeward to bring you the following podcast presentation.
A person who just rubs you the wrong way.
You gonna eat that?
What, that? No. Yes. No. Well, no, I crossed my mind. Yep.
They annoy you?
I'm very important. I have many leather-bound books, and my apartment smells of rich mahogany.
I'm friends with Merlin Olsen, too. He comes over on occasion.
Many times without realizing it.
Hey, guys. Oh, big golf, huh? All right. Well, see you later.
I'm Jim Burns. Let's be honest. Each of us has someone in our lives who, well, is kind of irritating. I mean, it may be a neighbor or a coworker. Perhaps it's one of your in-laws, may even be one of your children, especially if your children are teens. Hey, it could be your spouse. Well, these people aren't necessarily mean. They are certainly not abusive. They just get under your skin. Author Mary Sutherland has a term to describe this perfectly. The term is sandpaper people, and she calls it that because they tend to rub you the wrong way. They're not always easy to get along with, but at the heart of every sandpaper person is someone who may have been hurt during their growing up years, and that pain is what makes them so irritating to others. Well, during the next half hour, I'll continue my conversation with Mary Sutherland on dealing with sandpaper people. We're going to look at some very practical ways how you can smooth out those relationships, and we'll also consider what we can learn about God's love for us from the sandpaper people in our lives. So keep it right here on Homeward. From the studios at the Homeward Center for Youth and Family on the campus of Azusa Pacific University, welcome to Homeward with parenting and family expert Dr. Jim Burns. I'm Roger Marsh. Today, part two of a continuing conversation with author Mary Sutherland talking about dealing with sandpaper people. You know, those people that kind of rub you the wrong way from time to time. God uses them in our lives in ways that sometimes we don't want them to be used, but they're very beneficial to us. And we're going to learn some practical lessons on that topic in just a moment. First, I want to thank you for your prayers and faithful financial support. We're nearing the end of the summer months. These are always tough months for ministries. You have been steadfast in your giving, and if you can support us with an extra gift right now, we would love to hear from you. Your gift of $15, $20, $50 or more goes a long way at homeward.com. And now, here's Jim. Welcome to Homeward. I'm Jim Burns, Mary Sutherland with us, dealing with sandpaper people. You know, sandpaper people are hard to get along with, but with God's help, I think we can learn to love and accept them, and we are so fortunate to have Mary Sutherland with us, continuing conversation. She's a nationally known inspirational speaker and author, and she and her husband Dan have been married for 31 years. They live in North Carolina with two children, and they've got two grandchildren. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
Great to have you with us. What a conversation. I mentioned this in our previous conversation. In the movie When Harry Met Sally, Sally was described as a high-maintenance person of the worst kind. She thought she was low-maintenance. And in some ways, that also describes sandpaper people. We talked about it previously, but kind of give us again, what is a sandpaper person?
A person who just rubs you the wrong way. They annoy you many times without realizing it. They want to get into your life, and they don't know how to do it in a healthy way, so they do it in an unhealthy way by doing unhealthy things.
Yeah, and as you said earlier, too, it's not about abuse.
No, that's a whole different thing.
It really is a whole different thing. Now, what caused you to focus on getting along with sandpaper people?
Oh, my husband was a youth pastor, and we had this kid. This is why I wrote the book. He drove me nuts. He was always in my face, you know, and he was always punching me in the ribs. He was about 15, and he drove me crazy. And this went on and on and on, and I was praying about this kid one day, and God said, you know you have to love him. Well, I just didn't really appreciate that. So I really began to look for something in this kid to love, and it took me about a year to work through all that. And finally, I realized that we were at a place of peace. You know, I mean, we weren't best buddies or anything, but he didn't any longer drive me right up the wall. And that's where the term sandpaper person came from. And when I got to the place where I was great with Seth, I thought, I got this down. Do you know that Seth's evil twin has been at every church since? They're everywhere, Jim.
Now, your husband is a pastor, is
yes,
that right?
Yes, he is.
Right.
Yes. They're everywhere.
Hear that. Just hope you're not the sandpaper person in your church. Now, I want you to tell us the story of how actually your kids won over kind of this grumpy sandpaper person neighbor at Christmas one time. What'd they do?
Yeah, we had lived in a neighborhood of mostly retired people, and most of the people adopted my kids as grandparents. It was great. And except for the neighbor who lived behind us, and it was an older couple. And they didn't like my children because they made too much noise. They did not like where we put our trash can because it was over in their property. They did not like our dog because the dog barked. They would leave notes on my windows, on my doors, on my car. Do something about your dog. I mean, this went on and on. And I was just trying my best not to go over there and kill them. There's a spiritual response for you. And Christmas time every year, we were in South Florida. So the first day that even remotely looked like a cool day, my kids and I would make sugar cookies and Christmas cards for the special people in our lives. We were having this Kodak moment, you know, you could hear the Christmas carols and the cookie smell and the kids were playing and making cards. And all of a sudden, Jared looks up at me and he says, Mama, what kind of card do you think we should make for them? And I prayed with everything within me that he was talking about somebody else. I said, Son, who are you talking about? He said, the Smiths. And I went, why would you want to make them a card? They're mean. Hey, you're like a great mom, huh? And he said, but Mom, they don't ever have anybody at their house. They don't have any bicycles in their yard. And he said, and they don't have any pets. I don't think anybody ever comes to see them. I said, fine, make them a card. So he did. And then we got that done. And on the way out the door, Dana said, Mama, let's take them some of your sugar cookies. Now, you have to understand, my sugar cookies are just like well-renowned sugar. I said, you want to take them some of my cookies? Yes, Mom. So she put them in a tin, and we got that ready to go. And we got almost out the door, and Dana said, wait. She runs to her room and Jared's room and picks out two books. Maybe they'll want to read to us. And I thought, right. We head over there. Every step of the way, I'm going, please don't let them be home. Please don't let them be home. We get up to the door. Jared rings the doorbell, and this grouchy old man opens the door, and he says, what do you want? Well, now, you can mess with me all you want. Don't mess with my kids. I was about ready to just take his head off. But before I could even respond, Jared thrust this card that he'd made up in his face, and he said, we made this for you. It's free. I thought that's a good point.
Great line.
Yeah. And the man kind of looked at it, and Dana pipes up, who's 3 years younger. She pipes up, and she said, yeah, it's for your mother. I thought, great. She's just aged his wife, 30 years right there. And I wondered what he would do. And he stood there, and I could see the transformation in his face. This little twinkle came in his eyes. He stepped back in the house, and he said, Mother, we have company. So they invited us in, Jim, and for 2 hours, ate cookies, read stories. It was amazing. Just total transformation.
Yeah.
When we left, they said they were Jewish people, and they were precious friends, as it turned out. And they said, you should have more children. They're beautiful. Next time, bring the dog. I was like, oh my gosh, you know, that's not the end of the story, because about 6 weeks later, that man had a heart attack, and Dan went up to visit him in the hospital and led him to Christ.
Oh my gosh, great story.
And that never would have happened
had
our children not seen a need
that
we didn't want to see or couldn't see and met it.
And it's what you said, it's about being intentional. I mean,
exactly.
They had not been kind to your children.
No.
Your children just figured out, and, you know, out of the mouths of babes, sometimes they do that. I think also in your book, didn't you say that all teenagers go through a time when they're going to be sandpaper people?
Yes.
Give us some hope on that. In fact, I just got something from a very good friend of mine who actually runs one of the radio stations that we're on, who said, you know what, my 15-year-old isn't, you know, hardly speaking to me anymore. You know, this is a great guy, great family and whatnot.
Yes.
But in some ways, there's kind of a sandpaper relationship going on. What's your advice to them?
I'll give you the advice my daughter gave someone. She was, I guess, the person who kept me on my face, broken before God. Dana's bipolar and has been from birth. And the first 17 years of her life were just no other way to say it. They were hell on earth.
Mm-hmm.
And after 17 years, God just slapped her awake and turned her around. And someone asked her after all of that, Dana, what did your parents do that you think helped you get to that place? And she said, it just blew me away. She said, they never gave up and they never gave in. And I just think you have to keep on. You have to be consistent. And just, you get on your knees for your kids. They're trying on identities, like, you know, they try on new clothes. They don't know who they are. They're in as much turmoil as they try to produce. They want to fit in. Every sandpaper person wants to fit in and find the approval of somebody. So I think we just view them that way and know this too shall pass. And it really does most of the time.
Yeah, great, great input from Dana. never give up.
Isn't that
never
great?
Give in.
Yep, very, very helpful. And today, as we're having a conversation on the Homeward broadcast that hopefully is really touching your heart and encouraging you, especially for those difficult situations and those challenging relationships, parenting and family expert Dr. Jim Burns having a conversation with author and speaker Mary Sutherland. Now, if you look for her stuff online, it's Sutherland, but she pronounces it Sutherland. And the program we're focusing on today here, Dealing with Sandpaper People. And these are our principles that she includes in her book called Sandpaper People. If you go to our Homeward Online Resource Center today, hit the radio broadcast section, you'll find today's broadcast listing, and there's Mary's name, Dealing with Sandpaper People. We'll have the conclusion of this conversation in just a moment as Homeward continues.
I'm Jim Burns with today's Homeward Snapshot.
Heather, oh my gosh, did you hear about Cassie?
No, what happened?
Oh my gosh, okay, so Cassie's dad's like a yacht captain.
No way.
And they have like this really super big boat, I guess, and he's like gone most of the time because he's the captain stuff.
Yeah?
Anyway, while he's gone, Cassie's mom, or maybe it was her stepsister. Anyway, this person calls 911 and said that Cassie had like an overdose, or she like broke her ankle, or I don't know.
Who told you this?
Well, my sister's boyfriend's cousin's neighbor's karate instructor is friends with the guy who like assists to like the person who enters all the like computer stuff at the rehab place next to the hospital where my other sister's best friend's ex-girlfriend used to work, and she told me that Christina jumped.
Now, if you're a parent, you know that gossip is common among kids of all ages. Boys gossip just as much as girls do, so this is an issue no parent can ignore. Make it clear to your kids that gossip is harmful to everyone involved. Proverbs 16:28 reminds us that a perverse person stirs up dissension, and a gossip separates close friends. And for a free copy of my new tip sheet called The Dangers of Gossip, go to homeward.com. I'm Jim Burns.
Welcome back. I'm Jim Burns. What a joy to have Mary Sutherland with us today. We're talking about dealing with sandpaper people. Sandpaper people are hard to get along with. They're somewhat cantankerous at times. And interesting enough, sometimes they provoke anger in us. Then we find ourselves kind of losing it right in front of them when, in fact, they were the ones who maybe started it. But now we're acting just like they are in terms of the sandpaper story. Mary, we were talking earlier about sandpaper people and how we can, you know, love them and care for them and believe in them and be patient and all this kind of stuff. But, you know, there's just times when they all out bug us and we get angry. And then we say something we don't mean, or we do something.
Exactly.
Or I know for me, sometimes I then withdraw and I just kind of stay away from them when really that's not the way to do it either. Well, how do we deal with our own anger at somebody who's not really getting along with the program very well?
In the book, I think there's like five steps that I go through. I'll just go through those very quickly. But we need to come to the premise that sandpaper people love a good fight because it means they're in your life.
Interesting.
They're getting your attention. You are invested in them because you're fighting with them. But it's real impossible to wage war with the enemy when you have laid down your weapon and said, I'm not doing this. So the first step is to admit that you're angry. You know, so many times in early years of marriage, Dan would say, what's wrong? Nothing. You know, I've done that a million times. I was furious. So to say I'm angry, sometimes we need to delay our anger for a little bit, to postpone it until we can gain control. I mean, Jesus did that when he was driving the money changers out of his father's temple. I mean, Scripture says he stepped aside and braided a whip. It's not because he took whip braiding 101 or something like that. You know, he was getting control of his anger. He was furious. So sometimes we need to stop and get control. Then sometimes we can totally dismiss it. Does this really matter? Is this even going to matter an hour from now? We need to pick our hill, you know, pick our battles. And then we need to resolve it because sometimes that demands that we take some kind of action. And that's a daily spiritual discipline. That may mean we need to make a change in our lives or write a note of encouragement or call them and apologize or resolve some kind of action. But I think one of the greatest things we can do, Jim, is to prevent anger, to keep our lives from being so near the surface of exploding. And the Scripture says it real clearly. Proverbs 22, 24, and 25 says, do not make friends with a hot-tempered man. Do not associate with one easily angered, or you may learn his ways and get yourselves ensnared.
Yeah, interesting.
So we have to put that barrier up. And the other big thing, I think, is balanced life. Because when our priorities are skewed, then it is so much easier for us to explode. At least that's true in my life.
Yeah, you know, it's great input, actually. But I'm thinking, I want to push a little bit on the marriage side. Mm. I'm thinking about somebody who says, "Yeah, I'm married to a sandpaper person. Mm-hmm. They don't know it, but I know it the children know it. We actually talk behind their back. You know, that's not healthy, obviously. No. But how do they deal with it when they say, fine, I do all the stuff that that you say, Mary, but then sometimes she doesn't change or he doesn't change. And so we just keep going back to it. And we just, and finally, then I have low-level anger. And, you know, it's breaking the intimacy part of the relationship apart because there's just low-level anger, low-level frustration.
Well, sometimes you just have to get over it. But a lot of times what you need to do is... I get emails like this all the time from women who say, you know, my husband's driving me crazy. And I always ask them, first question, have you sat down face-to-face with your husband in a non-emotional moment and told them exactly how you feel? Not what they're doing wrong, but how that makes you feel.
That's good.
I think that's a key step to start. Sometimes it needs Christian counseling. You know, you need somebody else's perspective.
Sure. Now, interesting enough, you just kind of brought up where I was going to go. I wanted to talk to you about confrontation, because confrontation is an act of love.
Yes, it is.
In fact, I have the gift of exhortation, which is usually encouraging, but sometimes I need to confront and use that gift, you know, spiritual gift type thing. But when it comes to confrontation, what does it look like? What does effective confrontation look like?
Well, if we don't confront, it looks like we don't care. It really does. It's a gift we bring. It's kind of like the spiritual surgery. My statement is silence is agreement. You know, if you love somebody, you're going to level with them. But we need to choose confrontation, not combat. They're not the same thing. And as I said earlier, the goal is winning. No, the goal is restoration. But we come into it many times wanting to win. We have to lay that down. But we confront with the right motive. That's always love. We confront in the right way, not screaming at the top of your lungs, and don't ever write it down. You write down encouragement. You say, you know, tough things face to face. And you confront at a time where you think you have the best chance of no interruptions and the best chance of that person's emotional response. Not when they walk in from a very tough day at work. I got to talk to you. You know, it's like going out to dinner, you know, sit down and say, you know, I got this problem. And I really need to tell you how I feel about it. And confront the right audience. This absolutely can destroy a relationship. When you confront somebody in front of others, it demeans them. It makes those people wonder, you know, what kind of guy this is or what kind of woman this is. And they actually turn you off anyway. They don't listen. So, you know, confrontation is a good gift that we bring to every healthy relationship.
And I think it's hard because a lot of times we don't want to confront.
No.
Or the sandpaper person doesn't say, thank you so much for sharing that. You know, then
rarely.
They explode and then you're, you know, you want to keep moving on it and it's a tough deal.
You know, we're not responsible for the reaction.
Yeah.
We're just responsible for obeying as far as we know.
Right.
And we know we're supposed to confront them in love. And their response is between them and God.
It's very important that I think our listeners hear that I'm not responsible for Kathy's happiness. I'm not responsible for my teenager's happiness. I'm just not responsible. Now, there's a part of it that I need to do my part.
Sure.
But the truth is if they are spinning for some reason, I want to be able to serve them. But at the same time, it's not my responsibility. It is between them and God, and they've got to work out some things.
I think a lot of sandpaper people are just the result of wrong expectations. We're expecting them to make our happiness a real thing.
Right.
We're expecting them to make us content. That's not what God ever intended in a relationship.
Very, very, very true. I loved this, and yet it's quite a challenge. You say that with sandpaper people, learning to be thankful is one of the most important choices you can make, but it's also one of the most difficult, isn't it?
Yes, it is, because we tend to be thankful for the good things in life, and we don't view sandpaper people or difficult relations as good things. It's more of a heavenly perspective. But sandpaper people, God uses them like spiritual tools to keep us broken. A student came across the verse, Deuteronomy 6:6. Those commandments that I give you today are to be upon your heart. And he asked his teacher, why does it say upon your heart and not in your heart? And the teacher said, it's not in man's power to place truth directly in the heart. All we can do is place them on the surface. And when the heart breaks, truth falls in. And that is, when I read that, I thought, that is exactly what sandpaper people do. They keep us broken. They keep us on our face. They keep us seeking God. Like, what do I do with this person, this child, this husband, this wife? And they're a good thing.
Yeah.
They're tools in the hands of God.
No, it's really good to look at it that way.
I think you have to or you'll die.
No. and the relationship can die
Absolutely.
As well. And we had to do that with our kids.
Sure.
You know, we had to say, I think Kathy and I actually grew closer and drew closer to the Lord during tougher times with
Absolutely.
Our kids when they were teenagers than, you know, during the easy times.
Exactly.
I don't know if there were ever easy times, but, you know, kind of different times, the emotional, you know, tough times.
Right.
Now, one of the things that I love that you said, and I want you to, you know, help our audience in not much time left, but help us understand why it's so important to stay committed to a sandpaper person for the long haul, even when it costs us some emotional energy, spiritual energy, physical energy.
Difficult people, sandpaper people, are so used to people walking away and walking out of their lives. They drive them away to prove that the things they think about themselves, the inferior things, are true. They set themselves up to fail, and they destroy relationships in order to say, see, I am inferior. See, I am this. And they're not used to people staying. You know, and God is really big on commitment. We love because he loved us, and we can stop loving others when his love runs out, and we can stop forgiving others when his forgiveness runs out. And commitment says, I'm staying no matter what.
Love that word, commitment. It's so very, very important. It's kind of basic, isn't it? Your relationship is not going to work if you don't have a commitment to it from both parties involved. And that's good counsel from Mary Sutherland today here on the Homeward Broadcast, and concludes our two-part conversation with her on dealing with sandpaper people. If you missed any part of this program, remember we podcast the Monday through Friday edition of the Homeward Broadcast. Go to homeward.com, hit the radio broadcast button, and once you see that page in front of you, it says a podcast resource there. Just click there. It takes you right to our site on iTunes, and you can start your free subscription. Jim, I know there's a book that's important to you, Peculiar Treasures, and you have a little excerpt of that you'd like to share with us as today's edition of the Homeward Broadcast comes to a close.
I think it describes a sandpaper person, but it also describes how God loves all of us.
Great.
She was always good company, a little heavy with the lipstick maybe, or less than choosy about men and booze, a little loud, but great on a party and always good for a laugh. Well, then the prophet Hosea came along wearing a sandwich board that read, "The end is at hand," and on the other side, "Watch out," on the other. Now, that's Hosea. That really is the beginning of Hosea. And, of course, she was a prostitute, and God told Hosea to marry a prostitute named Gomer. Well, the first time he asked her to marry him, he goes on, she thought he was kidding. The second time, she knew he was serious but thought he was crazy. And the third time, she said, yes, he wasn't exactly a swinger, but he had a kind face, and he was generous, and he wasn't all that crazier than everybody else. Besides, any fool could see that he loved her. It's a neat story. It's actually a love story here, Roger. Give or take a little, she even loved him back for a while, and they had three children whom Hosea named with weird names, like Not Pitied, for God Will No Longer Pity Israel Now That It's Gone to the Dog, so that every time the roll was called at school, Hosea would be scoring a prophetic bullseye in absentia. But everybody could see the marriage wasn't going to last, and it didn't. Now that's probably Hosea 1 and 2. While Hosea was off hitting the sawdust trail, he was a prophet, of course, Gomer took to hitting as many night spots as she could squeeze into the night, and any resemblance between their next batch of children and Hosea was purely coincidental. It almost killed him, of course. Every time he raised a hand to her, he burst into tears. Every time she raised one to him, he was the one who ended up apologizing. Now, he tried locking her out of the house a few times when she wasn't in by 5 in the morning, but he always opened the door when she finally showed up and helped her to bed if she couldn't see straight enough to get there herself. Then one day, she didn't show up at all. Now, again, this is in the book of Hosea that she went off and lived her life of prostitution. Well, he swore that this time he was through with her for keeps, but of course he wasn't. When he finally found her, she was lying passed out in a highly specialized establishment located above an adult bookstore, and he had to pay the management plenty to let her out of the contract. Now, again, that's in the scripture, not exactly in this way.
Oh, man.
She'd lost her front teeth, picked up some scars you had to see to believe, but Hosea had her back again, and that seemed all that mattered. At the end of Hosea, and again, he's paraphrasing, as you can tell, he changed his sandwich board to read, "God is love" on one side, and there's no end to that love on the other. And he stood in the street corner belting out, and now he quotes Hosea, "How can I give you up, O Ephraim? How can I hand you over, O Israel? For I am God and not man, the Holy One in your midst." Nobody can say how many converts he made, but one thing that's for sure is this. Including Gomer, there was seldom a dry eye in the house. Hmm. Now, it's a beautiful story of a woman who had gone astray. This was definitely a sandpaper person, but because of God's love, Hosea, you know, held it. It's a beautiful illustration of God's love for the church.
And God's commitment to the church as well. And that's the love that we're to show other people as well. It's a very, very powerful illustration to conclude this edition of the Homeward Broadcast. Now, as Dr. Jim Burns has been having this conversation with Mary Sutherland, if you missed any part of it, and you don't like to go online necessarily, you'd rather have a compact disc in your hand, Ben will be happy to burn you one. Our engineer Ben Camp sitting here right next to me. And all you have to do is include a gift of any amount in support of our ministry. And we usually set the bar around $10, $15 for a CD, but you can give whatever you'd like to give. And then write to us. Write to us at Homeward, Post Office Box 1600, San Juan Capistrano, California, the zip code 92693, or call us at 800-397-9725. We'll be happy to process that request for you, and we thank you for your tax-deductible donation. Also, make sure you check us out online, too. browse around a while when you go to homeward.com. Lots of free resources there. The articles and tip sheet section has literally thousands of resources that you can take advantage of at homeward.com.
Well, please know how much we appreciate your prayers and your ongoing financial support of Homeward. You can give a gift through our secure website at homeward.com. You can also mail your tax-deductible donation to Homeward, Post Office Box 1600, San Juan Capistrano, California, 92693. You can also friend me on Facebook, and if you'd like to follow me on Twitter, you can now get my tweets, 140 characters of positive words about parenting, marriage, and faith. Until next time, I'm Jim Burns. Thanks for tuning in today to Homeward.
Homeward with Jim Burns is a production of the Homeward Center for Youth and Family at Azusa Pacific University.